supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Delaware promotes early education for low-income children by financially rewarding high-quality childcare programs. But now the initiative known as STARS faces financial problems of its own. WHYY's Chris Barish reports.
At Babes on the Square Child Care Center in Brandywine 100, 160 little stars spend their days in a nurturing, learning environment. Director Andrea Keating says the goal for the children, ages 6 weeks to 5 years, is to have them ready to thrive in kindergarten.
We are the base. We begin the process of learning, of reading, and without the work that we do, children start school not being prepared.
Educators consider early learning the most critical component to reducing the glaring achievement gap between low-income children and those of means. For example, in third grade English, 37% of Delaware's poor children score proficient, compared with 63% of children who aren't low income. A similar disparity exists in math, science, social studies, all the way through high school. Those jarring statistics are burned into the mind of Logan Herring, who runs the Kingswood Community Center. The multipurpose complex is next door to Wilmington's impoverished Riverside Housing Project.
If you can't read, that means you're not just struggling in English class, but you can't read your math books, you can't read your science books, you get frustrated. Everything starts in the early learning stages, and we have to be able to address those needs.
To help cut the gap, Delaware pays most or all child care costs for poor parents who are working or going to school, a subsidy that last year cost taxpayers $70.4 million. Centers who take low-income children can also qualify for additional subsidies under a program called Delaware STARS for Early Success. Centers earn from 1 to 5 stars for the quality of their staff, curriculum, and family engagement. Michelle Shavitz, who heads the Delaware Association for the Education of Young Children, says directors have embraced the voluntary 9-year-old STARS program.
This is a center director or an owner saying, I want the best I can possibly give to my staff and the children we serve and the families.
Centers rated 3 or above receive so-called tiered reimbursements of up to $15 a day for every low-income child. The higher the ranking, the higher the subsidy. The state spent $20 million last year on STARS reimbursements. Keating Center serves 55 poor children and has 4 STARS.
I get about $12,000 a month from the tiered reimbursement at a STAR 4. And that money's gone. It goes to pay for, you know, the increased education of staff. It goes to pay for what benefits I can offer to staff. It goes to make sure that we have a high-quality food program.
Keating is now going for a Star 5 rating. That would bring another $4,000 a month. But in September, the state's 500 Star centers received unsettling news. Under Governor John Carney's shared sacrifice budget, they would not receive additional money by raising their Star level. Center directors had been buoyed by Carney's claim that he planned to, quote, maintain investments in Stars. But in late September, they officially learned in a letter from state early childhood director Kim Krasnowski that Star centers could not increase their Star level or receive higher payments. Her letter said, quote, there is not enough funding to expand Stars and tiered reimbursement in the 2018 fiscal year. Shavitz says state officials had assured them funding was going to be sustained, not frozen.
From the government perspective, you know, when they shared that information, they said, you know, there's a lot of different organizations that have been cut completely, but when you're a person losing $50,000 a year, then that word sustained means nothing to you, not for all the work that you've done.
Krasnowski tells WHYY that despite the freeze, the state remains committed to STAR centers. The state did relent somewhat and allow centers to pursue and earn higher ratings, albeit without getting additional money if they do move up in rank.
Although we've had a very tough budget year, we'd still been able to recognize programs and still provide them with their current tiered reimbursement levels.
Child care centers are now preparing to lobby state officials and lawmakers to unfreeze the payments for the next fiscal year, which begins in July. Krasnowski, a Kearney appointee, says she is on their side.
So I'm hoping that next year we will be in a situation where growth can happen for STAR programs and that the investment can continue. Some will have to say, without tiered reimbursement, higher level tiered reimbursement, I just can't offer the same services to these children and families. And then that impacts our community. It impacts children coming into kindergarten. It impacts third grading reading levels.
But even without the financial bonus, Keating and other directors pledged to continue the hard work of teaching the littlest learners, especially the neediest.
Look at this.
What shape is it?
They will run our economy someday. You know, they don't have to go to jail. They don't have to have services in high school because they're not prepared. Their health will be better because they've been taught how to take care of themselves. What we do right now changes the entire outlook of our state.
They're hoping the current freeze won't last too long. Some say they might have to stop taking poor children or even have no choice but to shut their doors. Chris Barish, WHYY News.
Cheney University, the nation's oldest historically black college and a school nearly at the brink of collapse, has 1 year to return to health. Let's consider the diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis with Dr. Earl Richardson, former president of HBCU Morgan State University in Baltimore. Dr. Richardson, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
I presume you've been looking at the specifics of Cheney and its situation. Is there any ambiguity about the diagnosis? This is truly a school on the brink.
Well, yes. I've been familiar with Cheney for a long time. I had the pleasure of being a reviewer on one of its accreditation evaluations, I guess about 30 years ago. And I guess another 20 years ago, I had the pleasure of sitting as the chairman of the Middle States evaluation team for Cheney. So I have some familiarity with it and some of the issues that it confronted even then.
So how would you assess what has transpired in the interim between when you were most recently affiliated with it and what's happening now?
It was predictable. And as a matter of fact, we did indeed represent in one of the evaluation reports that the state needed to invest significantly in Cheney because Cheney was one of the institutions in one of the fastest growing areas of the state of Pennsylvania, the Delaware Valley, and that there was a continuing need for a higher education institution there, and that if for no other reasons, as a business kind of decision, that they would invest in Cheney. At the time, I believe they were suggesting that Cheney should significantly reduce its expenditures by eliminating programs, while at the same time increase the enrollment, which I thought at the time was a kind of oxymoron. How would you increase the enrollment if you're cutting out the very programs that generate the enrollment?
And it certainly sounds like your concerns were borne out. Now Cheney's enrollment is about half of what it was merely a few years ago. In your assessment, to what extent are Cheney's problems unique to Cheney, or are they a microcosm of what's happening on a larger scale at historically black colleges and universities?
I think that it is a microcosm of what is happening, or to some extent already happened, at some of our other historically black universities. And I think that much of it is due to the neglect of the states, that all of the historically black colleges that are located in the South or on the border states of the South suffer the same maladies, and that is the neglect of the states for the public universities.
When Cheney did get its reprieve last week, extending for a year its status, our governor, Tom Wolf, for one, backed the effort to create a pathway forward for Cheney, though realistically, how much clout does he have?
Well, I think the governor has a lot of clout. I understand the politics of it, one party against the other. But unfortunately, it was not a partisan issue in the neglect of Cheney. I think you've had Republican governors and you have had Democratic governors, and you have said the same effect when it came to the issue of Cheney State's development, or broadly saying, when you are looking at the funding distribution across all of the institutions.
Though the clock is ticking and those robust challenges, to what extent can they be implemented in the remaining year to do so?
Well, I think it starts with a commitment. And so I thought that when the governor suggested that he was waiving the debt for Cheney, I thought that that was a major step forward. However, it is just the first, the beginning, because what must follow that then is the commitment to invest in the infrastructure of Cheney such that it is competitive with all of the other institutions. And when I say the infrastructure, I simply mean the academic program inventory, a robust and highly attractive, unique set of programs, the faculty and staff to support it, the facilities that are modern and up-to-date and will attract students. It's this competitiveness of the institution for students, for faculty, for grants, for fundraising, and all of those things that makes the difference in not only what funding it needs, but how it compares ultimately with the other institutions around it.
Dr. Richardson, we in turn are thankful for your substantive perspective on this matter. Thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
Dr. Earl Richardson, former president of HBCU Morgan State University in Baltimore. For low-income college students, Thanksgiving break can be a tough time. Some are homeless. Many others can't afford a proper holiday meal. Though, as WHYY's Aaron Mozell reports, some Philadelphia area schools are extending a helping hand.
Paula Umania directs Single Stop. It's a center launched by the Community College of Philadelphia that offers help to low-income students, including help with food. Single Stop is closed during the Thanksgiving holiday, but Umania says the center handed out $6,000 worth of gift cards to students in need before the break.
People say, my mom is going to be so happy. I didn't know how we were going to make it. Now I'm going to be able to bring food to the table. Some people say we were going to go to a shelter. Now, thanks to this, I'm going to be able to have a meal with my significant others.
In October, Rutgers University Camden opened a small food pantry on campus. Earlier this week, it was handing out the ingredients for a Thanksgiving meal.
We have everything from, you know, cornbread to a pumpkin to, you know, Thanksgiving traditional spices.
That's Maria Serra, who directs student health services at Rutgers Camden, where the pantry lives. She estimates that a quarter or more of the school's roughly 6,000 students are food insecure. That's defined as not always being able to afford safe and nutritious food.
We have a pretty high number of first-generation college students. Those are students whose parents never went to college. They're the first ones to go. We know that food insecurity tends to be much higher amongst those students.
Temple and Drexel universities are among those that allow students to stay in their dorm rooms during the holidays at no extra charge. Aaron Mozell, WHYY News.
When the 39th annual Thanksgiving Day MS Run gets underway Thursday in Wilmington, Karen Woods will be honored by family and friends participating in the effort to raise awareness of and money for multiple sclerosis research. That includes Karen's sister, Linda Richendorfer, who's taking time away from training and Thanksgiving preparations to join us. Linda, thanks for being here on NewsWorks Tonight.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Condolences to you and your family on the passing of your sister, Karen, back in August.
Thank you. It was a very long journey that we were all on. My sister never gave up, and I think that right now we're still not living the reality of it yet. We still have a ways to go.
I'm sure Thanksgiving Day and the Thanksgiving table will be a very sobering in part experience as well.
It will be. Karen was always there to help with the conversation, to keep things lively, and was one of the few people who would eat my carrot casserole. So I've had to take that out of the Thanksgiving menu at this point.
So she did the conversation, you did the carrot casserole.
That's right. Well, it's always been in my house, Thanksgiving, and it's going to, you know, just be a little different this year without her sitting there trying to lead the conversation and repeating things for my parents, who are a little hard of hearing these days.
She was diagnosed in 2012, then at the age of 48. And one notion that you want to impart, I'm sure, is that the progression and severity and the specific symptoms vary widely from person to person afflicted with this disease.
They certainly do. We got to know others. I was even surprised at one point to find out that one of my teammates on my dodgeball team had been diagnosed at the young age of about 20, and she was then in her mid-20s, and she could still be very active. She just needed to keep an eye on whether or not some of the symptoms were creeping up. With my sister, it was fast, and her mobility took a large turn for the worse, I would say, within a year of her diagnosis. And it just frustrated her. So one of her fondest memories is she loved being on the beach, just laying on the beach in the sun, reading, was something we shared. And, you know, she was bound and determined. Even at the end, when we practically had to carry her across the sand, she would still get down to the water's edge and sit there and read with us.
Lying on the beach is a little different than running on what could be a cool Thanksgiving day.
It could be. This is the fourth year I've been running in this. Some years we've lucked out. So far, no rain during my participation. It will be chilly, but one of the things that keeps us going is that the course is crowded, which is good. A lot of people there before eating Thanksgiving dinner. We have a wonderful turnout every year. And so many people are there because they are connected to the cause in some form or fashion, and we're all there to raise money and awareness for MS.
And in case you're too modest, let me then disclose that in the effort to close in on the overall goal of raising $50,000, it's your team, Woods Walkers, that is now in the lead in terms of raising money, and you are the top individual donor as well.
Well, I wanted to make a special effort this year for my sister. And the team really came together nicely. I have to admit, it was hard for me to sign up, and took me a little while to get up the team page and my own page because of the memory behind it. But we are doing it, and a lot of people who have never run or walked 3.1 miles are going to be with us that day for Karen.
Well, we are rooting for Woods Walkers and all the teams and individuals participating in this Thursday event. Thank you so much for sharing your reflections and insight on NewsWorks tonight.
Well, thank you so much, and we really appreciate this ability that we can reach out to the community at large.
Linda Richendurfer on NewsWorks tonight. A world premiere musical now at Arden Theater Company is called Touchstones. It's about two characters whose lives are changed by phone sex. WHYY's Howard Shapiro offers this review.
Touchstones begins at a religious camp in 1994, where the campers take an oath to wait for sex until they're married. Two of them, Christine and Justin, meet there and fall in love. Jump 5 years forward and they're engaged, sitting on a couch in Christine's apartment and holding hands while they close their eyes and fantasize about ripping off each other's clothes. But that bothers Christine, who believes that vow or no vow, it's time for more than canoodling. No, says Justin, we took a vow. She discovers, though, that he's been calling a phone sex number. You've been cheating on me, she argues, and ends their relationship. She then goes to find the woman he's been talking with and ends up as an operator at the phone sex firm. Here are the other operators training her in their own style of phone manners.
You're gonna be who they want. You're gonna be who they need. If you can pick up their clues and put yourself in their shoes, you're guaranteed to succeed.
Christine begins to assume a character totally different from herself, as the operators suggest.
Smart and sassy.
Cool and classy.
Smooth. tender,
tough,
cuddly,
creamy,
steamy,
dreamy,
hot but haughty,
nice but naughty,
swanky,
clanky,
skanky,
slinky,
slow and steady, always ready.
The new musical, Touchtones, takes on a lot. It's by locally based playwright Michael Hollinger, who's had many world premieres at the Arden. He wrote the script and lyrics, and Robert Maggio wrote the music. It's about a particular corner of the sex industry built fully on fantasy, but its plot suggests that fantasy is the same as cheating. Touchtones is a comic musical that attempts to resolve serious questions it poses. Is sex before marriage good or bad, practical or not? Is fantasy an act of betrayal? And then it clumsily evades these questions with a non-answer. Just be yourself. That's it? The effect is like a waitress asking if you want maple syrup with your burger. Touchtones has its moments. An occasional big laugh plus clever lyrics and spunky music. The cast is uniformly solid, with Alex Kuyper, who recently won a Best Actress Barrymore Award for a previous role, and Michael Dougherty as the ill-fated young couple. The show isn't helped by little blackouts that ruin the momentum between scenes. But what really falls flat is its artificial ending, just be yourself. That's a solid idea, but it addresses nothing here. Touchtones runs at the Arden through December 3rd. I'm Howard Shapiro for WHYY.
That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Thanks for listening. On behalf of all of us at WHYY, wishing you a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. I'm Dave Heller. Newsworks Tonight.